This day is April 12th, 2024 of the Common Era, and the time is 1623 Eastern Daylight Time. Ward Green with you again today for our study, little children. Let's continue right where we were leaving off yesterday about the article that Joe Lanyadu wrote, which was, well, we didn't actually get there, but today I'm referring to it, to explain why the letter M, we say, means mother. In his article, which is called, it's in our paragraph 10.2 of the Crucible, in part 2 of the Crucible, chapter 10, paragraph 2, reference 1, is the Lost Book of Thoth, is Torah by Joe Lanyadu, that article there. In that article, he says that the letter M means water and mother, so it's both. That I needed to explain before we begin. Now we're continuing in chapter 10, paragraph 3 of the Crucible article. And he's got this immense amount of knowledge about the Hebrew language that is, it's unchallengeable because he knows so much more than anyone else. And so it's very difficult to really assess how true he is. I mean, how true his information is. But there's enough evidence to suggest that it may be very much in line with truth, a lot of what he says. So let's take a look at our paragraph again. We say that Amen means in Hebrew, truly, but the letter M and N are the only consonants. Therefore, the letter M meaning mother and the letter N meaning the abyss. We have mother of the abyss, or mother of an abyss, mother of an abyss. The chronology established by means of Moses and the Bible, with all of secular history, necessitated redating Egyptian history from the time of Thutmose III, who subsumed the reign of his father and his aunt, so that his year one was the death of Thutmose I, who was, in our chronology, the pharaoh of the Exodus. So, the time of Moses is connected to the time of Thutmose III by that means. And so we had to redate Egyptian history from the time of Thutmose III, making sure that the Exodus could be possible. So that Pharaoh Ramesses II now begins to rule in 1315 BCE. That's another consequence of the date that we gave to the kings that preceded Ramesses II, including Thutmose III, because Thutmose III was 1493 after he adjusted his year one. That was his year one after the adjustment. And 1315 was Ramesses II, so that's 178 years later? Yeah, 178 years later, if I did the math right. So they affect each other because they're not that far apart that they would be independent. And we appropriately tabulate, in fact they would never be independent if we knew every detail about every king, but we appropriately tabulate the calculated Babylonian kings alongside Assyria's kings. And I write, at the time of the Crucible article, when I wrote this, I call it the first ever attempt of this. And it really is unique. There's no one else who has these dates. For Burnaburiash II and Ashur-uballit I, 1370 for Burnaburiash II and 1374 for Ashur-uballit I, as far as their year one goes for each of them. And the reason why this is very important, and it fell out naturally as a consequence of the work, is that Shalmaneser I, in year 20, which would be 1264 here, based on this table, which puts year 1 in 1284, the Assyrian king Shalmaneser I, at the end of the table, we see in his year 20, that was very nearly the date of the Battle of Neria between Assyria and the Hittite kingdom. We don't have the Hittites in this table, but it's important that we've dated them here in this later commentary, we see that King Tudhaliya the Fourth, dated now 1264 to 1236, was defeated in that battle, and that was right at the beginning of his reign, because it was year 20 of Shalmaneser the First. In our chronology, it works naturally well, because there were revolts against his power at the same time early in his reign, which makes a perfectly good fit with this whole alignment. But we didn't really do a lot of work on that. It fell out naturally, and the reason why it's confirmed is because down lower in the comment here, Assyrian king Tukulti-Ninurta I is believed to have been a contemporary of Supaluliuma II. Now, Supaluliuma II, we didn't mention yet, but he preceded the Hittite king during whose reign the eclipse occurred. And the reason I said I mentioned that the eclipse was total at Troy, too, was because Troy was a city of the Hittites, as well as Hattusa, the other main city of the Hittites. So the eclipse having occurred at Troy and Hattusa would prove that, if I've got the name Hattusa correct, would prove that it's the main two cities, so therefore that would be even more reason for Mersili II, who wrote about the eclipse, so some people think, anyway. We believe that the record of that eclipse was in the 10th year of Mersili II, from the record of his own records, you know, and that shows that, therefore, his year one was 1250. So, therefore, his predecessor, Supaluliuma, who ruled for 27 years, when we go down further in this commentary of this table, in paragraph 3 of chapter 10 of the Crucible, we see that Supaluliuma the First, mentioning the solar eclipse in 1340 BCE, which Peter Huber, gave as the date, which date he gave, in fact. And he was the only one that we know of who gave that date for that eclipse, but he's a very good researcher. Knowing all about these alignments with the Hittites, he gave it the date of 1340. And that means that Supaluliuma the First was correctly dated 1377 BCE as year one, because he ruled for 27 years, 1350 being year one of Mersili II. So 1377 to 1350 for him, and knowing that his reign, evidently, according to the evidence, and some people just ignore the evidence, but when we don't ignore the evidence, Tukulti-Ninurta the First ruled from 1254 in our chronology. So that overlaps with the reign of Supaluliuma the First, 1277 to 1250, we just said. Because they overlap, then they could have been ruling at the same time. If we were to, you know, if we were to raise that by more than 4 years, they wouldn't overlap. So if we were to try to alter in the same vein the reign of Tudhaliya the Fourth, trying to make his reign overlap more with Shalmaneser, we'd still possibly ruin that synchronism between Tukulti-Ninurta the First and Supaluliuma the First. You see? So, 1264. Oh, I'm talking about Tukulti-Ninurta. Who is Tukulti-Ninurta the First? That doesn't seem right now. Hang on a second. I just noticed something. Where is it? Let's see if we've done this correctly. 1377. Yeah, 1377. Right. No, okay, so is his reign the one? It doesn't correspond, does it? It's a different century. There it is, okay. Tukulti-Ninurta. I've got to find that again where I mentioned Tukulti-Ninurta Where is it? Okay, there's no problem with Tutelaya, is there? No, that part is not a problem. Tukulti Ninurta. Ninurta. There he is. Right? Have to go down. There's a lot of kings named that. Well, Supaluliuma of the Second. I'm sorry, not Supaluliuma of the First. Right. Supaluliuma of the Second. Okay, yeah. Well, I did the preparation wrong. But okay, so, okay, that's very important to get that right. Get the right Supaluliuma. But, okay. Okay, let's find the reign of Supaluliuma the Second now. Because we do talk about the reigns in this comment section. The reigns of the Hittites. I mean, that's why these things are so difficult, right? But I know this research was done. But I'm always potentially going to find new errors. It's possible, but I don't expect I will, but we'll see. Copy and paste to search for that name. There it is. There it is, right. Yeah. Okay, 1236 was the end of Tutelaya the Fourth, and then there's 20 years for the last king, who's Supaluliuma the Second. So he's 1236 to 1216. 20 years. Okay, 1236 to 1216. Let's look at Tukulti Ninurta again, the first. 1236. There, you see there's only a short overlap between the end of Tukulti Ninurta in 1232 and 1236 for the beginning of the reign of Supaluliuma the Second. But if we did raise the Hittites, it wouldn't make that worse, and it wouldn't make the reign of Tutelaya the Fourth worse either in terms of the overlap. It's just that we think that it's correct the way it is. So this is great. We see that these things matter because there are existing documents, right, that show evidence about the contemporaneous kings or the contemporary nature of certain kings of different kingdoms. And the other thing about this table that's so important, little ones, is that all these kings, the Babylonian kings, Burnaburiash, Ashur-uballit, they had synchronism with the Egyptian kingdom. King Tut, for example, had correspondence with the time of this Burnaburiash, I think, Burnaburiash the Second, or Ashur-uballit the First, and that's during Tut's reign from 1357 in our chronology, fits perfectly in the time of both of those kings, right? So there's so many things that have to line up in order for a chronology to be true. That's all for today, but we're going to be continuing. I mean, I'm excited to get back into the study here. Before we go again into the reading of the Bible, we need to do something we missed yesterday, little children, our study. No, we need to find, I need to verify for a moment. I need to verify what happened here. There we go. We were supposed to do 5 and 6, but we forgot. So today's proverb is Proverbs 15, 5 and 6, and we'll do 7 and 8 as well. A fool is despising his father's restraint, and he who's regarding reproof. Let's try that again. A fool is despising his father's restraint, and he who's regarding reproof is a saint. It's a little bit of a tongue twister. The house of the just is abundant with gold, but wicked ones gather where trouble is sold. A fool is despising his father's restraint, and he who's regarding reproof is a saint. The house of the just is abundant with gold, but wicked ones gather where trouble is sold. And verses 7 and 8. The lips of the wise scatter knowledge around. The heart of the stupid is not to be found. A gift made in guilt gets Jehovah's disgust, but pleasure he takes in the prayer of the just. That's our proverb for today, little children. Now, in 2 Chronicles 34, it has 33 verses. It's part of the story of Josiah. And in our chronology, we date Josiah from 639 to 608. He was preceded by Amon, 641 to 639. And Amon was preceded by Manasseh, 696 to 641 BCE. All of these dates BCE. And by the way, if you do want to get the link and make it work, in the previous table, table H3, and this is from Moses Part 2, by the way, the article Moses Part 2. And if you find the article Moses, you just put a hyphen and then the number 1 or 2 after the word Moses in the address bar, you'll get to Moses Part 1 or 2 that way. But you can also, if you click on this and you can't get the eclipse, you might be able to get it if you click on it by looking at the address. If you look at it and you find that there's a symbol, and I don't know whether it would appear in here. Right, is that it there? Let me just zoom in. If we zoom in on this, yeah, the brackets. If you see brackets in the address name, then you need to remove those brackets and replace them with something. So let's try replacing them with hyphens. I think that's what I replaced them with originally. So if we then say, yeah, then it works, you see. Press enter after you replace the brackets with hyphens and you get the actual eclipse image that you couldn't get before. So before I update that, you can still get that information by doing your own edit in the address bar. It's true of many of the articles too. If the article name is incorrect in the link, you can, in many cases, just take the last part of the name and put a hyphen and then a 1 or a 2 or a 3, depending how many parts, and depending which part you're looking for of that article. And then press enter and you'll get that part of the article, usually. So, I mean, that it will work all the time, provided that that was the name given to that part of the article. And it does work many times. So that's it for today's glance at that, but of the dating of Josiah. But it's very important to know what year it was, because when we come to chapter 35 of Josiah, I mean of the Bible, of Second Chronicles, which talks about Josiah, we're going to see, I think it's in this part, where it talks about the year, the 18th year of Josiah. I was just reading it, but it wasn't in this format that I read it, so I'm trying to find, there it is. Yeah, here it is. There's a great Passover. And there it is, verse 19. In the 18th year of Josiah's reign, this Passover was held. So it's in the 18th year of Josiah that he holds the Passover in chapter 35 of 2 Chronicles. That's important because year 1, we just said, is 639. So subtract 17 years from to get year 18, and you get 622. And that 622 is one of the years. It's a Jubilee year, counting from 1422 every 50 years for the Jubilees. So it's a remarkable, important date, because the Jewish tradition also says that that 18th year of Josiah was a Jubilee year. That's, and they actually say which of the Jubilees it was. Like, they say it was the 17th Jubilee, I believe. Is that right? Yeah, I think that's right. 17th Jubilee. So 16 times 50 is 800 years earlier. That's 1422. 800 plus 622. Right? Little children, ask your parents. 622 plus 800 is 1422, and that is the first Jubilee, the beginning of the Jubilee cycle in the days of Joshua, 30 years after crossing the Jordan in 1452 in the genealogy. It's a remarkable achievement that the chronology provides for us, right? It's an incredible, powerful thing. It aligns with the Jewish tradition in certain important ways. 8 years old was Josiah when he began to reign, and for 31 years he reigned in Jerusalem, and he proceeded to do what was right in Jehovah's eyes and walk in the ways of David his forefather, and he did not turn aside to the right or to the left. And in the 8th year of his reigning, while he was still a boy, he started to search for the God of David his forefather, and in the 12th year he started to cleanse Judah and Jerusalem from the high places and the sacred poles and the graven images and the molten statues. Yeah, he was the one who tore them down. We just read about, not long ago, we were reading about people who were starting to, the king, the wicked king, was it the one who preceded Josiah? Who preceded Josiah? Manasseh, right. He built again the high places in verse 3 of chapter 33 of 2 Chronicles. But Josiah was a good king. He was tearing down the high places, cleansing Judah and Jerusalem from the high places and the sacred poles, verse 3, and the graven images and the molten statues. Further, they pulled down before him the altars of the Baals, and under his orders, evidently, and the incense stands that were up above he cut down from off them, and the sacred poles and the graven images and the molten statues he broke in pieces and reduced to powder, and then sprinkled it upon the surface of the burial places of those that used to sacrifice to them. And the bones of the priests he burned upon their altars. That's important as a fulfillment of a prophecy, right? Right? This prophecy from 1 Kings 13 and 2. O altar, altar, this is what Jehovah has said. Look, a son born to the house of David, whose name is Josiah, and he will certainly sacrifice upon you the priests of the high places that are making sacrificial smoke upon you, and men's bones he will burn upon you. See, that was a fulfillment. Wow, he sprinkled upon the surface of the burial places, and the bones of priests he burned upon their altars. It's interesting, it doesn't mention here in 2 Chronicles that he sacrificed the kings on the altars. I mean, the priests. It doesn't mention he sacrificed the priests on the altars. Excuse me. But it mentions that he burned the bones of priests on the altars. Thus he cleansed Judah and Jerusalem. We don't have any evidence contrary to the idea that he sacrificed the priests on the altars. Also in the cities of Manasseh and Ephraim and Simeon and clear to Naphtali, in their devastated places all around, he even went pulling down the altars and the sacred poles and the graven images he crushed and reduced to powder, and all the incense stands he cut down in all the land of Israel, after which he returned to Jerusalem. And in the 18th year of his reign, here it is again, verse 8, the 18th year of his reigning, when he had cleansed, so this proves or confirms the 18th year for that Passover, when he had cleansed the land and the house, he sent Shaphan the son of Azaliah, and Maaseiah the chief of the city, and Joah the son of Joahaz, the recorder, to repair the house of Yahweh, his God. And they proceeded to come to Hilkiah the high priest, and give the money that was being brought to the house of God, which the Levites, the doorkeepers, had gathered from the hand of Manasseh and Ephraim. They were the tribes in the northern kingdom, and across the Jordan, the half-tribe of Manasseh was also, but and from all the rest of Israel, and from all Judah and Benjamin, and the inhabitants of Jerusalem. Then they put it into the hand of the doers of the work that were appointed over the house of Jehovah. In turn, the doers of the work who were active in the house of Yahweh applied it to mending and repairing the house. So they gave it to the craftsmen and the builders to buy hewn stones and timbers for clamps, and to build with beams the houses that the kings of Judah had brought to ruin. And the men were acting in faithfulness in the work, and over them there were appointed Jahath and Obadiah the Levites from the sons of Merari, and Zechariah and Meshullam from the sons of the Kohathites, to act as overseers. And the Levites, each of whom was expert with the instruments of song, were over the burden bearers and the overseers of all the doers of the work for the different services. And from the Levites there were secretaries and officers and gatekeepers. Now while they were bringing out the money that was being brought to the house of Yahweh, Hilkiah the priest found the book of Jehovah's law by the hand of Moses. So Hilkiah answered and said to Shaphan the secretary, "The very book of the law I have found in the house of Jehovah." With that Hilkiah gave the book to Shaphan. Then Shaphan brought the book to the king and replied further to the king, saying, "All that has been put in the hand of your servants they are doing, and they pour out the money that is found in the house of Yahweh, and put it in the hand of the appointed men, and into the hand of the doers of the work." And Shaphan the secretary went on to report to the king, saying, "There is a book that Hilkiah the priest gave me." Almost said it in an offhanded way, it sounded like. And Shaphan began to read out of it before the king. And it came about that as soon as the king heard the words of the law, he immediately ripped his garments apart. Then the king commanded Hilkiah and Ahikam, the son of Shaphan, and Abdon, the son of Micah, and Shaphan, the secretary, and Asaiah, the king's servant, saying, go inquire of Jehovah in my own behalf and in behalf of what is left in Israel and in Judah concerning the words of the book that has been found. For great is Jehovah's rage that must be poured out against us because of the fact that our forefathers did not keep the word of Jehovah by doing according to all that is written in this book. Accordingly, Hilkiah, along with those with whom the king had said, went to Huldah, the prophetess, the wife of Shallum, the son of Tikva, the son of Harhas, the caretaker of the garments, as she was dwelling in Jerusalem in the second quarter, and they proceeded to speak to her like this. In turn, she said to them, this is what Jehovah, the God of Israel, has said. Say to the men that sent you to me, this is what Yahweh has said. Here I am bringing calamity upon this place and its inhabitants. All the curses that are written in the book that they read before the king of Judah, due to the fact that they have left me and gone making sacrificial smoke to other gods in order to offend me with all the doings of their hands, and that my rage may pour forth upon this place and not be extinguished. And to the king of Judah, who is sending you to inquire of Yahweh, this is what you should say to him. This is what Jehovah, the God of Israel, has said. As regards the words that you have heard, for the reason that your heart was soft, so that you humbled yourself because of God, at your hearing his words concerning this place and its inhabitants, and you humbled yourself before me and ripped your garments apart and wept before me, I have heard, is the utterance of Jehovah. Here I am gathering you to your forefathers, and you will certainly be gathered to your graveyard in peace, and your eyes will not look upon all the calamity that I am bringing upon this place and its inhabitants. Then they brought the reply to the king, and the king proceeded to send and gather all the older men of Judah and Jerusalem. The king now went up to the house of Jehovah with all the men of Judah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem, and the priests and the Levites and all the people, the great as well as the small, and he began to read in their ears all the words of the book of the covenant which had been found at the house of Yahweh. And the king kept standing in his place and proceeded to conclude the covenant before Yahweh, to go following Yahweh, and to keep his commandments and his testimonies and his regulations with all his heart and with all his soul, to perform the words of the covenant that were written in this book. Furthermore, he had all those who were found in Jerusalem and Benjamin take their stand to it. And the inhabitants of Jerusalem proceeded to do according to the covenant of God, the God of their forefathers. After that, Josiah removed all the detestable things out of all the lands that belonged to the sons of Israel, and he had all who were found in Israel take up service to serve Jehovah their God. All his days they did not turn aside from following Jehovah the God of their forefathers. That's the end of 2 Chronicles 34. Josiah was indeed a good king. According to that, we now have Zechariah chapter 2. Short, and we don't have much time either. And I proceeded to raise my eyes and see, and look, there was a man, and in his hand a measuring rope. So I said, where are you going? In turn he said to me, to measure Jerusalem in order to see what her breadth amounts to and what her length amounts to. And look, the angel who was speaking with me was going forth, and there was another angel going forth to meet him. Then he also said to him, run, speak to the young man over there, saying, as open rural country, Jerusalem will be inhabited because of the multitude of men and domestic animals in the midst of her. And I myself shall become to her as the utterance of Jehovah. A wall of fire all around, and a glory is what I shall become in the midst of her. So he said, as open rural country, Jerusalem will be inhabited. Hey there, flee then, you people, from the land of the north, is the utterance of Jehovah. For in the direction of the four winds of the heavens I have spread you people abroad. In the direction of the four winds of the heavens is the utterance of Jehovah. Hey there, Zion, make your escape, you who are dwelling with the daughter of Babylon. For this is what Yahweh of armies has said. Following after the glory, he has sent me to the nations that were despoiling you people. For he that is touching you is touching my eyeball. That's what Yahweh said. For here I am waving my hand against them, and they will have to become spoil to their slaves. And you people will certainly know that Jehovah of armies himself has sent me. All Jehovah has to do is wave his hand, and these things become history. Cry out loudly and rejoice, O daughter of Zion. For here I am coming, and I will reside in the midst of you, is the utterance of Jehovah. And many nations will certainly become joined to Jehovah in that day, and they will actually become my people. And I will reside in the midst of you. And you will have to know that Jehovah of armies himself has sent me to you. And Yahweh will certainly take possession of Judah as his portion upon the holy ground. And he must yet choose Jerusalem. Keep silence, all flesh, before Yahweh, for he has aroused himself from his holy dwelling. He has aroused himself from his holy dwelling. And that concludes Zechariah chapter 2. Many nations will come. You will have to know that Jehovah of armies has sent me to you. That's what Zechariah says, that Jehovah sent Zechariah. But the interesting thing, now, that's the end of our study. The interesting thing regarding supplements and things like that, vitamins and minerals, the drug companies and the people with money can't afford, or very few people can afford to spend money to do studies, scientific studies of vitamins and minerals. It happens occasionally, but all the main money that's certainly from the drug companies, all of their money goes toward researching patentable substances that they patent, which are not natural substances, and they're not vitamins, they're not minerals and vitamins for nutrition that they're publishing and that they're researching. So the studies that are done on vitamins are few and far between. That's something to remember. But vitamins are food, right? And supplement minerals, these things are food. They're part of the food group. So you don't have to consider that they're anywhere close to being as dangerous as drugs, even though vitamins do have their dangers at certain unusual times in unusual circumstances, as I found out when I overdosed on calcium because I took accidentally, that is, I took too much vitamin D. But if you're within bounds of anything reasonable, I was taking way more than normal of vitamin D. And because I wasn't softening my water, I had a lot of calcium in my water, and that's what caused the unusual case of my poisoning with calcium. But generally, you don't ever have a problem. But I still think it's important, even in my case, that I have to consider going back and revisiting some of these problems I had in the past, finding out, doing it using the knowledge I've learned, doing it in a safer way, and finding out exactly what's happening. Because nobody else is going to do these studies. That's what you have to realize. So, but, I mean, I won't do it until it's necessary, because it's live or die. That's what research in food is. It's live or die. If you don't learn it, you're going to die. So it is April 12, 2024 of the Common Era. The time is 1656 hours Eastern Daylight Time. I'm Ward Green. I love you very much. I've enjoyed being with you today. And once again, in my behalf, this is Liv Dusty. And this is Cassie saying bye for now. Isn't the greenology phenomenal?